We were talking about the ways in which this golden ratio manifests in the human form, and another one that I just discovered yesterday, in fact, is teeth. There's a dentist who has a site on the internet. He's obviously made quite a study of this, and he's invented this set of calipers that always open up in proportion of the golden ratio. And he's applied it to teeth, which he uses in his work for prostheses and repairs after injury and so on. And he's established that there are many, many proportions of the golden ratio applying to particularly the teeth and the mouth. For example, the two front incisors taken together are in the proportion of the golden mean. The distance from the jaw when it's at rest to the teeth to the nose is in that proportion. Adjacent teeth moving out from the centre, the pairs are in that proportion. And he's used his calipers also to to look for this golden proportion in various other areas. So here are just some examples. The spacing of leaves on a stem, the petals of a flower in relation to the seed head, another proportion on a flower. And this is an ancient Inca or Aztec work of art, which is also, he says, in that proportion. It's even been applied to the ideal horse, which is in this proportion. So there's no end to it. Now, this proportion is also related to the Platonic forms, and it would be a whole another lecture to go into these, but just to mention it in passing, these are the Platonic forms, the dodecahedron, icosahedron, the cube, the tetrahedron, and the octagon. And these are just models of them. There are five of these, for those who haven't come across them. Interesting number. And they are related, or at least three of them are, relate quite strongly related to this golden proportion. And that's what's illustrated here. So if you take the dodecahedron, and if you join the centres of the faces in this way, it defines three rectangles on the three planes, and each of those rectangles is in proportion of the golden mean. Similarly, the icosahedron, drawing the rectangles in this way from the vertices, again, those three rectangles are in the proportion of the golden mean. With the octahedron, it's slightly different. You need to take a point on each side and join them. You have three golden rectangles. This point divides the length of that side in the golden mean proportion. So it's obviously very closely related there also. Now, the proportion's been used extensively in architecture. And I'll just show a few examples here. This is a Renaissance building in which various proportions are related to phi. This is a seat from the Egyptian tomb of Petosiris, and an analysis of that, which is shown here, shows that many of the dimensions are related to phi, the golden ratio. So it's all based upon those proportions. And this is actually taken from this book, Sacred Geometry. I'll just read you what the commentary says about it. It says, this analysis shows that the master Petosiris had a complete and extremely sophisticated knowledge of the golden proportion, revealed very simply in a play of geometric relationships resulting from two overlapping rectangles. The golden mean proportion philosophically represents the seat or basis of the created worlds, hence perhaps the title that was given to Petosiris, Master of the Seat. The burial practices in the Pharaonic tradition were undertaken not merely to provide a receptacle for the physical body of the deceased, but also to make a place to retain the metaphysical knowledge which the person had mastered in his lifetime. The proportions of the seat of Pet Osiris, as shown in his tomb, reflect this intention. And there isn't time to go into it, but yes.
The rule of thirds, which from are taken from this golden man, the rule of thirds, in art there's the rule of thirds.
Yeah. Well, no, it isn't. It's it's perhaps an approximation. I mean, that is talking about a proportion of 2/3,
yes,
which is 0.667. This proportion is 0.618, so it's quite a bit different. But perhaps that's an approximation to it. I don't know. Not being an artist. There isn't time to go further into the Egyptian culture, but it is true that many of the chambers in the pyramids are rectangular spaces which are based on phi and phi squared proportions. And perhaps it's no coincidence that the chamber containing the king's tomb in the pyramid of Ramesses IV, for example, is described as the golden chamber. And it has the proportions, its length and width to the height are 5:1. So it's quite common in the Egyptian culture. The Parthenon is in this proportion. The front elevation is a golden rectangle. And an analysis of that shows that there are all sorts of proportions of square root of 5, rectangles, squares, etc., which is all related to that. There are subdivisions of that initial golden rectangle. This is the city gate in Baghdad, which we have the dentist calipers here. Showing that it also is in proportion of the golden ratio. The dome of St. Paul's Cathedral, again, is in those proportions. The United Nations building in New York is in the proportions of the golden ratio. So it's not just ancient structures, it's been used in modern structures as well. In fact, Le Corbusier, an architect who lived 1887 to 1965, he developed a proportionate scale based on this golden mean, which he called the modular scale, and he used that apparently in everything that he designed. And it shows the height to the navel as being in the proportion of the golden mean to the overall height, but also with the raised arm, and the head divides this section from the navel to the top of the hand in that same proportion. And he had a whole cascading set of dimensions following these proportions, and as I say, used them in everything that he designed. The violin. There's those dentist calipers again, but shows that the violin is commonly in this proportion. In fact, it's said that Stradivarius used this proportion intentionally in the placement of the F holes in the violins that he designed, and that's an approach that's still followed by contemporary violin makers. It's also been suggested that Mozart used this proportion in his music. I'm not sure of the truth of that, but many of the sonatas divide into two parts exactly at the golden section point. Whether that's something that he intended or just an intuitive application of these principles, I don't know. But it's certain that Béla Bartók, another composer, did intentionally use this proportion in his compositions. Yes?
Is this mathematics that is taught in architecture schools?
Sorry, is it?
Is this taught in architecture?
Is
the golden ratio taught in architecture?
I'm sure it would be. Engineers and architects generally don't talk to each other very much, so. So I can't really say, but I'd be surprised if it wasn't. Certainly, people like Le Corbusier would be studied. And so,
for example, the United Nations building, is that done? Do we understand that's done deliberately?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. There's a lot of mathematics involved in music. Plato defined music as number in motion, and that's a whole rich field. And to follow that up, I suggest you come along to the next talk in this series, which is on that very subject. Also, works of art. This is an ancient mask of Hermes, which, as you can see, is based on the shape of the pentagon and its subdivisions, which, as I mentioned earlier, are all related to the golden mean. If the side length of the pentagon is 1, then this diagonal across here is 5 proportion. So right through this whole mask is the proportions of 5 and square root of 5. This is a painting by Leonardo da Vinci, Annunciation. I've put some lines on here to show that where these proportions would fall. There are many ways in which this could be done. You may or may not think that that's significant, but it does seem to me that these lines, 1/5, 1/5 squared, both ways fall on significant compositional elements in this picture. The overall rectangle that the picture is painted within is a square root of 5 rectangle. So the length is square root of 5 to the height. Another example, this is by Piero della Francesca, Baptism of Christ. And this analysis is in the book on sacred geometry, but it shows that that composition is rich with proportions of the golden ratio, 5. And another one. This is Perugino, Madonna and Saints. Again, it seems to have a strong compositional basis in the golden ratio. Albrecht Dürer was probably the most famous German artist at the time of the Renaissance. That's a self-portrait of him on the left, and it's said that the face there is constructed purely on geometrical basis, using these proportions of the golden mean. He was very interested in mathematics, studied it extensively, and travelled to Italy a number of times, had contact with Pacioli, referred to earlier, and with Leonardo and others. And they were all very interested in the applications of mathematics in their art. The engraving of Adam and Eve is also based on geometric constructions. And that's a painting of Dürer's, The Adoration of the Magi, and that also appears to be based on these proportions, the compositional elements. And one final one of Dürer, just to show how fascinated he was by mathematics. This is an engraving called Melancholia. But there are several mathematical elements in this. There's a magic number square in the background. There's a complex polyhedron here. And various other references to mathematics. There's those dentist calipers again. But as mentioned earlier, Mondrian. These colourful rectangles, but many of them are based on this golden proportion. Even modern designs are based on it. I'd like to just return to numbers and their characteristics. And there was a question earlier about 6 and about crystals and so on. Crystals, many crystals are based on the number 6. And they have, they're beautiful. These are snowflakes. Every one of them is beautiful in its own way. They have a sort of a hard symmetry, a perfect symmetry to them. And this appears often in crystals and other inorganic substances. These photographs were taken by a gentleman by the name of Wilson Bentley, who lived in the United States in the early 20th century. That's a photograph of him with his camera. And he devoted a large part of his life to photographing snowflakes, over 5,000 separate ones. And it was he that pointed out that no two of them were ever the same. Every one is different. This one I particularly like here. But every snowflake is different. Contrast this with five, the number five. These are some sea creatures, all of which show a five-fold symmetry, a pentagonal symmetry. The number five seems to be more associated with growth and organic things rather than six, which is based on inorganic, a hard symmetry. So five often occurs in plants and creatures, as we've seen. We have five fingers and toes on each limb. And as we've seen, that's the basis of the Fibonacci series, the golden ratio. The number of petals in flowers is often five. There are five platonic forms. There are five senses. There are five organs of action in Vedanta philosophy. And in the teaching of Pythagoras, five was the number of love. His teaching said that it united two, the first even female number, and three, the first odd male number. But it was the number of love. The ancients equated five with the element space, in which the entire universe is manifested. I'd like to read a quotation from Shantanand Saraswati about the number five. He refers to it, he uses the Sanskrit word here, akasha, which is the Sanskrit word for space. But he's talking about this element, space, number five. He says, number five falls in the middle from both sides. On one side is the coarse physical world, which can be subject to sense observation. And on the other side is the world of subtle and causal nature. When the causal and subtle world is transformed into the coarse world, then it is done through akasha, which connects both. It is like a transformer, which changes one type of energy into another, or like an interpreter, who makes obvious the ideas framed in an unknown language. It must have the qualities of both sides. Otherwise, no communication would be possible. Akasha gives way to all physical forms, and it is only due to Akasha that the creation has found manifestation. It stands as a bridge and joins the sensual world to the mental and causal world. Now, this is not the way that we usually look at numbers, but I think you'd agree it opens up a whole area of possibilities for exploring the truth in this statement. Now, the wise continually tell us that the ultimate substance of the creation is love, that all forms manifest in it, deriving their beauty, harmony, and proportion from it, and all relationships arise in it. So five, this expression of the love of the Creator, which stands behind the Fibonacci series, the golden ratio, and governs the growth and multiplicity of the manifest creation. It stands as a bridge and provides a means of appreciating our true nature, if only we can come to understand its qualities. Thank you very much.
December the 1st, Sunday, December the 1st here, as Stephen indicated, there's a presentation on music, and the presenter is Mr. John Shell. So, if you're able to come then, we'd love to see you. Now, just a little administration matter. There's a pair of men's sunglasses available here. They're left somewhere around the place. If they're not playing, I'll take them with me when I go. Now, is there any questions that we wish to ask Stephen before we wind this up?
Just about that last thing you were talking about with the number five. I saw that as the quote was two on each side, so there's two on each side and then one in the middle of this. So you can take them as five lines and then two lines here and then something in the middle. So the division, like the balance there, is that what that was talking about? Or?
Well, that's certainly one way of looking at it.
Yeah, that's how I saw it. It's like your consciousness and your physical world over here and then the middle being the meeting ground or the...
That's right. What Shantanand Saraswati refers to as the bridge, the transformer, the interpreter, those are the words he uses.
Yeah. Wow.
One association I've had, I'll try to get across. I've been coming along to the first series, and the definition, the basic interpretation of the positive of tamas was that which absorbs consciousness, and rajasic, that which reflects consciousness, are within sattvic, the conduit of consciousness. But in relating those terms to the five, if we relate stillness to tamastic, if I'm saying it correctly, and movement to rajasic, then that which absorbs consciousness could be the five, the centre of the mandala, and then the four aspects of movement, the movement either to move towards in the or away in the expansive, or to move in the constructive towards or away, represent the four. In other words, the rajasic represents the four aspects of the mandala, balance in expansion or contraction. The tamistic represents the absorbing consciousness of the space, of the center, and all three working together represent the two working together represent the sattvic.
Yes, that's fair enough. The division between sattvic, rajasic, and tamasic is usually, it's taken as a manifestation of the law of three. It's related to the number three. We've only been looking this morning at one of these elements, number five, or really that's been the thread running through. But one could do a similar study on number one, number two, number three, etc. Each of the nine numbers will manifest in its own particular way with its own characteristics. And those three guna, as they're called, are taken as a manifestation of the number three, the law of three. But yes, it does, it relates in the way you describe as well.
But it can just be that if one looks at anything that's moving, it has, first of all, you've got to have reference points, tamistic, and then you've got expansion or contraction, night and day. In other words, I know it's the three, but it's the representation of the rise and fall of life around the point, and the balance of those the rise and fall and the still point, all moving in correct proportion as the sattvic.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, after that question, are there any others?
just about the spirals. Why is it that it's not balanced that there's a certain amount of spirals going one way and then a different amount going the other way? I know that the whole thing's on that, but why is it that it doesn't seem to balance then?
Yes. It's because of the irrational nature of this number five that you don't get the same number going each way. It's because of that. And in fact, that's also why the number going one way, anti-clockwise, and the number going clockwise are always consecutive terms in that Fibonacci series, because they're related through this irrational number five. and that's what produces the densest possible packing. But the spirals themselves are an illusion, but a rather beautiful one.
One, Fibonacci numbers crop up in different sorts of stock market interpretations. Can you comment on that? And number two is that there are other special numbers in nature, with pi and the number that's represented by e come to mind. And what would be really interesting, and I don't know if there are, is any sort of relationships between these sort of special numbers?
Second one first. I haven't come across any relationship between them. They each have their own domain of operation, as it were, and have significance within that domain. As far as the stock market goes, yes, I'm aware that it is used. That's one of the many applications of it that wasn't mentioned along the way, but I haven't studied as to how it's used, but it makes sense in one way, in that the stock market is an organic, growing, changing thing. And as it appears, this ratio of phi governs organic growing things, then you would expect that it would be manifested there in the movements of the stock market as well. But I haven't looked at it, so don't go out tomorrow and make investments on my say-so. Yes?
Just a couple of questions. Have you looked at the use of this number perhaps in DNA strand and DNA sequencing, and have you got any comment about what may be more pertinent? Probably not a lot of people are aware of the overwhelming presence of C6, which is of course the number 6 governs the benzene ring, and that runs right through organic chemistry and into our bodies. But have you got any comment about the differences between 5 and 6 in that respect?
My comment about the DNA sequencing, I haven't looked at it to see whether this occurs. I wouldn't expect that it would, but if someone finds that it does, I'd be most interested to hear about it. But the thing about that is that today, modern science, biology, tends to place a lot of emphasis on DNA and genes, as if that could explain everything that we see relating to living creatures. What I've tried to show this morning is that there are a lot of things that don't need to be coded in DNA. DNA provides a mechanical coded way for life forms to form and develop. But underlying all of that is a set of mathematical laws, and there are also physical laws and so on, that have a much greater influence, really. It's as if the DNA sequencing just provides a mechanical way for it to unfold, but the real governing thing is the laws, the mathematical laws that are behind it. So I think there tends to be a little bit too much emphasis on DNA, and I guess the talk this morning is to try and counteract that to some extent, provide a different view. As far as number six, and it's very common in chemistry, as you say. I don't think I can add anything to what I said before, that it seems to relate to things that grow by accretion, by crystallization, not organically, by adding. By growing in proportion to what's already there, which seems to be the characteristic of five. Yes?
It just seems very interesting that what we perceive as beauty arises out of the irrational number five.
It is. That's an interesting paradox, I guess you'd call it. The rationality, the attempt to express things as simple ratios is, I guess, a human characteristic to try and pin something down. But really, things can't be pinned down that way, and certainly beauty cannot be fixed in such a way.
Yes. In relation to the golden rectangles, is it used in architecture? And if so, what buildings are examples of this?
Yeah, there were a number illustrated in the talk. Yeah, Renaissance buildings, many of them were designed with these proportions. A lot of the Egyptian tombs, pyramids, the spaces within them are in these proportions. More recently, the United Nations building is in these proportions. And an architect by the name of Le Corbusier used it in everything that he designed. He was late 19th, mostly 20th century architect. I couldn't say. I'm not aware of any buildings in Sydney that are designed on this basis. Perhaps that's an exercise for all of us. Go out and look, and please email me the results.
The reason a smile appears attractive, it's magical.
Yeah, I'm sure that's right. And the dentist, as I illustrated, had an inkling of that. And there are many other proportions too. The size of the eye, the width of the eye in relation to its distance from the nose, and I mean, one could go on, but one needs a pair of the dentist's calipers to go around.
All right.
Can you find on the art gallery, the proportions of where the artists are portrayed, they're all according to the golden ring as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's here. It's only for the city.
Yes, good. Thank you.
Any more? No? Well, thank you all very much, ladies and gentlemen, for your attention today. And once again to Stephen, thank you very much.